Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Rick Recking, a longtime member. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, family structure. We welcome you no matter your age or abilities or inabilities. Welcome. Later in the service, we will invite visitors and guests to introduce themselves so that we may get to know you a little better. Our programs are presented by members of our congregation, people from the wider community, or by our religious leader, Sandra Ingham. This program today is a part of a continuing series of programs that we're doing in Prairie about the Unitarian Universalist Association, the guiding set of the congregations of which we're a member. Holly Tellender is going to read the chalice lighting, number 453.
May the light we now kindle inspire us to use our powers to heal and not harm, to help and not to hinder, to bless and not to curse, to serve you, Spirit of Freedom.
Going to show my age by guessing that our presenter today, Holly Tellender, has been with Prairie for 3 years. Four. And she's been a great joy for our society to have, to bring some new thought into the way we deliver our religious education, which has always been high quality, but I think has since gained a measure of even better service to our young people. We know what a great joy it is for them to get this kind of instruction, and I'm so pleased to welcome today Holly Tellender, who's going to give us a presentation on RE Revision. Holly?
Hi, everybody. Haven't seen me in a while.
Can you speak up?
Yeah. So I'm here today to talk about some of the changes that took place this year in Prairie RE. You probably noticed that there was a big revamping of the program. We talked about it at the end of last year, what was coming, and now we're wrapping up that first year with this new model, and so I'm back to talk about how it went and give you some more insight into what were some of the driving forces within the DRE circles and the wider UU community to kind of push this forward. So, hit it. So I found this quote and I really liked it. There are two gifts we should give our children. One is roots and the other is wings. The interesting thing about this quote is I wanted to make sure I attributed it to the right person, and it was attributed to a bunch of men, but when I followed the breadcrumbs back at far enough, it was actually the first man who quoted it said he was quoting a wise woman from his community. So there you go. It's been around a lot, but I think it really sums up what all of us hope for with bringing our children to any sort of religious education program, that we want them to be grounded in who they are, but also growing and considering who they will become. So first, let's talk about what changed. And this is just for kindergarten through sixth grade. So the seventh graders and up, and we have like a kind of a desert period, right? When like the middle school, we've got some clumps of kids in the elementary. We have a desert period in the middle school right now, but that will change as they continue to grow. And the older kids, they were using a curriculum called Popcorn Theology this year, which they watched popular movies. I don't know how popular they ended up being. Some of them are pretty weird. but they had conversations about them. Learned a lot about how movies that were PG in the 80s, what would not be PG today. This is mostly what we're talking about today is mostly for the younger set, for kindergarten through sixth grade. So what changed? The main thing that changed is we moved from an age-segregated classroom model where kids were grouped by grade and followed a set curriculum. We moved into an age-integrated workshop model where, go ahead and change. Where instead of being grouped by age, they were grouped by interest. And that interest could change, right? They had a choice. When I first came on at Prairie, I really took some time to think about what I thought the program should be above all else. And with the help of the RE committee, we decided that we really wanted to strive to be inclusive, responsive, and progressive. And this is one of those ideas. You know, instead of grouping kids by their age, we created these flexible learning zones downstairs that actually made a better use of our space. So you've probably heard all this, but we have the outdoor classroom, the kitchen, the makerspace, the theater, and the studio. And different workshops happen in those zones, and kids choose where they want to be on any given Sunday. What didn't change, every year I give out a survey at the end of the year, and there's another one coming today, to ask parents for their input, family members for their input, and consistently for the first 3 years that I was here, there were three things that parents said they valued about bringing their kids to Prairie, and it is these three things: world religions literacy, social justice engagement, and UU identity and heritage. And that would encompass learning about the principles, the sources, famous UUs, prophetic men and women, that kind of stuff. So that stayed the same. Every single workshop that we did, whether it was a makerspace workshop or a kitchen workshop or a theater workshop, it was tied to one or more of these. And that was a big part of my job this year, was making sure that I could connect the stuff that we were doing that might, on the surface, not seem like a UU thing or a religious education thing, to a real life experience that connected one of these things. and we added this one, social emotional learning. This is something that, I had a career as an educator in the public school system before I came here, and I think that social emotional learning is one of the most important things that kids can learn. It's about how to manage themselves. If you go to the next screen, why social emotional learning? If you've heard of CASEL, it's the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, because this is an area that educators are oh, yeah. Yeah, can somebody hit the lights back there? Oh, sorry, I could do it. Can everybody see it?
Yeah, it's not perfect. Too small.
Too small, yeah. So I'll read it. But the educators, community groups are recognizing the need for kids to receive more direct instruction and more support in these social emotional skills, which would encompass self-awareness, right? How do I feel and how do I express that? Self-management, that's a big thing. How do I handle disappointment? How do I handle negative emotions and positive emotions? Responsible decision-making, relationship skills, and social awareness. And the call is for these things to be experienced and explained outside of school alone, right? In wider community circles. So we've been doing a lot of that. And Karen and I talk a lot about how that in and of itself, and that process that we go through to help kids just exist in a community, is such an important part of what happens downstairs. Yeah. And we wonder, what does social justice for kids look like if it isn't learning how to manage themselves within a community? Because we can get them to raise money. That's always fun, right? Making things and raising money and sending the money off. But what we really need for kids to be able to do is know themselves well enough to know what they're passionate about, what bothers them, and to be able to have the skills to engage with those ideas and other people who feel differently in a wider context. So why did we change? So all of these reasons, and there's a weird little thing there, but all of these reasons are my reasons, but they are also reasons shared by DREs across the board. The same issues repeatedly come up. We're dealing with a changing demographic, changing society, just a lot of changes. It's challenging, extremely challenging, to get enough volunteers, especially when we were talking about asking people to sign up for a full year commitment, four Sundays a month, in addition to time they spent outside of class planning curriculum. That had become unsustainable by the time I came on board. And we had a core group of people who were still willing to do it, but that core group of people was shrinking. And it was the kids were seeing the same people all the time, and there's nothing wrong with those people. We love those people. But it was just it wasn't meeting the objective of building community the way that I thought that we would like it to. Attendance fluctuations. People are busy, and early on wanted to create an experience where people felt like they could come when they could come, and they didn't feel as if they weren't there, that they were holding the rest of us up, or that they were missing something that they couldn't get later, or that if they went too many times without being able to come, that it was weird to come back. I wanted people to feel like this was here for them when they were ready and when they could access it and when it worked for them. And that's the same thing. You'll hear other DREs have tried things like full week faith. You may have heard about that. There's all kinds of ways that DREs are attempting to approach this issue of taking church and making it more accessible so that people feel welcome when they can come. Space considerations. We were running out of classrooms for kind of segregating them into age ranges, and that fluctuated every year. So some years we'd have 14 fifth and sixth graders and two-year-olds, or it was difficult. It was hard to manage the space. Relevance of content. The teachers, the people who volunteered, they worked really hard to make the content interesting, but sometimes kids just weren't interested in that, and it was a very passive model. It was show up. You remember the commercial of open your flip-top head with the toothbrushes? It was a lot like that. Show up, open your flip-top head, and we put stuff in, and we wanted it to be more engaging, more choice-based, and give kids more of an opportunity to engage, be interactive with the material rather than just receive. It was much easier to accommodate OWL schedules because one of the issues with OWL was...
Would you define that?
Yeah, OWL is Our Whole Lives. It's the lifelong sexuality program, education program developed by the UUA and the UCC, the United Church of Christ. And depending on what level you're at, like the 7th, 9th grade level is 25, 90-minute sessions. So it's a big program. And traditionally, we couldn't hold OWL during Sunday morning because if a visitor showed up and all the kids in that age cohort were in OWL, then they were kind of just on their own, And so now we did this last year, right? we ran the 4th to 6th OWL. During Sunday morning, which many parents appreciated, not having to come back a second time. And if fourth or sixth graders showed up, they just joined in the workshop model downstairs and did whatever we were doing for the day and didn't feel as if, they were missing out with their friends. And lastly, this is happening across the board. We are not unique in moving to a workshop rotation model. All Souls in Tulsa, which I think is one of the largest, they have a workshop model. We'll see a few more here in a minute, but we're keeping pace with the progressive educational trends to include, allow students more choice, give them more autonomy. Project-based learning is a big buzzword in the educational sphere right now. Multi-age interaction and engaging a larger community. So those are the reasons for the change. I haven't seen anything like training for DREs yet. There is a church, there's a Penny's back there behind you, Karen. There is a church, a DRE of the church in Boulder, Colorado named Katie Covey, who was the kind of where I got the idea to start, because the workshop model is based on the Christian churches have been doing it for a long time. And the way they do it is they pick a central story every month and they create workshops around that story for an entire month. Here at Prairie, we picked a theme just to kind of engage with a a bigger idea than just a story. But Katie Covey at the UU Church of Boulder, she has a program called Spirit Play, which is, or Spirit Jams, sorry, Spirit Jams. And it's very much like this. And she's doing some work to turn that into a program that people can share. She does have quite a few resources on her website that I pulled from. And I reached out. I'm part of several Facebook groups of DREs, and I kind of reached out and said, you know, here's the issues we're having. This is what I'm thinking about. And amongst the DREs, there was a lot of collaboration. I'm not entirely sure if the UUA has packaged something or it is packaging something that can help this. I don't see how they could avoid it for much longer if they haven't. But I will say, one of the other benefits about the workshop model is we do have a lot of curriculum from years past that is good curriculum. So one thing that would be really helpful is people who are interested to take home a curriculum, you know, page through it and see what's good. Because, you know, from some curriculums are dry all the way through. It's a hard sell. Some of them have some really good stuff in there, peppered in there. You just have to find it. And I'd love to be able to use the curriculum that we have, that we've collected over the years, in the small, you know, because a lot of those things can be pulled out as standalone workshops. I hope you all recognize this, but so every week on Mondays, usually, unless something happens, it's the choices for the week are posted on the Prairie calendar, they're posted on the Google calendar, they're posted on the website, and I was sending them out in a parent email, but I felt like I was sending too many emails. So if I get feedback that was helpful, I will resume that practice. But so the information is out there. My hope is that kids are hearing about it during the week. Here's what's going to be happening at Prairie. Think about what you might want to do. There's that, but then we have a community circle every morning. Right, they probably finished it up about 10 minutes ago. And at the very beginning of that community circle, I describe what the choices are going to be, and we do the rest of the community circle stuff, then we take a moment of silence, and we think about what we're gonna do, and then we pass the talking stick, and nobody seems to have any trouble deciding. The hard part for me is pairing equally cool workshops. That's like the challenging part, because I have to try and think about pairing something against the makerspace or the kitchen is really challenging, because those two workshops are really popular. Kids love to do real stuff, you know, like the makerspace is a huge hit. And I don't know if some of you saw the article I posted on the Views, written on the UUA call and response blog about how makerspaces really support Unitarian Universalist values. I'd be happy to repost it again. But more and more UU churches are including makerspaces because these are the skills we need to build in tomorrow's citizens. Problem solving, cooperation, communication, innovation. These are things that they are being asked to do, and they love to do that stuff. Some people have come to me and said, another really popular workshop we did last year was Sew Your Stuff. I don't know if you remember that one, but Heidi and Judy Skog, I think it was just you two, came down and taught basic sewing skills, and like kids brought in their stuffed animals. But that started as just sewing. How does that connect to Unitarian Universalism? And to me, I was, you know, anytime we're teaching them to be sustainable, right? Fix the things you have instead of getting new ones. Building those skills that families are very busy these days. I know I have a hard time teaching my kid to sew or cook, you know, things that aren't that interesting to me. It's hard for me to find the time to fit that in, but I'd love to do that with you. I'd love to talk that over with you. Video creation is something that is consistently requested by kids. These project-based skills are think about it, when you go out and you graduate from college and you go out into the job world, what are you given? A project. And a lot of the time, what's driving this change is that employers are saying, often, we are getting students who cannot innovate. They are used to regurgitating material. Those of you who've had any sort of educational theory background, you know there's a hierarchy of knowledge, and the very easiest thing to do is recall, right? Just recall something that you've been told. And as you move up the hierarchy to the very top is synthesis. Can you take all the things that you've been told and can you create something new? And that requires time and space. And it requires us giving the kids the autonomy to choose. Last year, some of you may remember, we did a version of Church Across the Street where we had speakers come from all different faiths, and we had some really great speakers. I recognize that visiting the places of worship is really meaningful, and Karen and I had a conversation about this yesterday, because we also will need to figure out what's happening with the older crowd next year, because the model is changing again. For them, do they want to do a curriculum? Do they want to do a workshop, you know, type idea? And we had said that Church Across the Street, is that what it's called? Church Across the Street? Some field trip based curriculum would be really good for the older kids. We took the younger kids to the Hindu temple last week, and it's difficult to take young kids to different places of worship because it's hard to get them to understand what the expectation might be. And there's, for instance, at the Hindu temple, we heard a lot of, it's smelly in here. Lots of choruses of, it's smelly in here. So it made me realize, yeah, this might be for an older crowd. And so we do have a group of boys that are moving from elementary into middle school. And it's interesting because it's all boys as of now. And they're all very quiet. And we are thinking about what we might do with them next year. The workshop model works really well for K-5, in the way that we ran it this year. But we do, I'm constantly trying to figure out how we can meet the needs of all the age groups. And it was interesting because Ron was able to share his experience of being at rallies. That's living history kind of stuff that's really important for them too. I've just had a conversation with my kids recently about how their grandmother was around for the desegregation of schools, and it blew their mind that somebody who's alive, they don't have that context. It blew their mind that somebody who's alive now went going to school where black people and white people couldn't go to school together. This is the kind of stuff that we really improve when we bring everybody in and make it more accessible to anybody who wants to volunteer. So why change? Okay, so here's some of the information from the UUA website about OWL. It's built around multiple intelligence theory, which was another theory by educational theorist Howard Gardner. If anybody has educational background, you probably heard of him. But he said that people learn things in different ways. Some people are auditory learners, some people are visual learners, some people are kinesthetic learners, some people are nature learners, they need to have access to the natural world. Some people are musical, they need rhythm, and there's eight. He identified eight. And that's what this workshop model is based on. It says it was developed in the early 90s as a model adaptable to all sizes and budgets, to slow down the learning process and give children more time and different ways to process their learning by focusing on a story or theme per month with enriched learning environments. So that was where I got the inspiration. That was where I really kind of focused on that. Guides, which are all of you, are recruited to help make the people connections. I was there at the peace sit-in, I marched at Selma. To workshop leaders are recruited based on their gifts and their expertise. And then this quote that I found from the Search Institute, which has been conducting global research on spiritual development, said that one fundamental aspect of spiritual development is interconnecting, linking oneself to the narrative, communities, mentors, beliefs, traditions, and or practices that remain significant over time. And the best way for us to do that is to participate in intergenerational learning activities, which, is, like we said, is difficult, and we want to make that as easy for people as possible. Here's just a list of churches that are doing the workshop, just one page of many, but you can see, all sizes. All sizes. We got, a really large to small. All sizes of churches can run this model. And in fact, most if you ask the DREs, I think her quote got cut off down here, but she says, I'll never go back. The DRE at Unity Church in St. Paul, with a congregation of 800. And I don't even know how that would work, but so they're making it work. So what does our Sunday look like? I talked about this a little bit. We have an opening circle. Every single opening circle, we talk about the principles. we talk about the sources. We just remind them of what those are, because you know, we're not raising people to believe any one thing. We're not raising people to be Unitarian Universalists necessarily, but we're raising them to have some touch points, right? Some touch points when it comes to decision making, and I don't know what to do, and I know these principles, and these principles align with my values and my family's values, and I can use these principles to help me decide how to be in the world. So we cover that every single day that we're here. We do some sort of a connective practice, which falls under the social emotional learning. We do some mindful movement, AKA yoga, but you know, there's all different ways to do yoga. We talk about the theme, we make the connection, and then we give the choices, and then they can go off to their workshop choices. They choose, there's usually two or three, depending on how many people I can recruit, choices, and they go off to those. But they also can access a quiet room, which we just implemented this year to be more welcoming to families with kids who have special needs, or, you know, anybody really has special needs at any time. Sometimes some people just, you know, come to church and it's a day they just don't want to engage. And so we have a quiet room where they can listen to the service up here. They can do puzzles. They can listen to music. They can just retreat. And then that's been, we've gotten a lot of good feedback about that from families who, for whom it is difficult to come to church because they're not sure how their kids are going to react to the noise or the activity or the space. So that was something we did this year. And then we always try to offer the service upstairs as an option, because that we don't want that to seem as like a punishment. it's weird that sometimes comes across like, well, you have to go upstairs. Like, you know, we don't want them to feel like coming upstairs is a punishment. Sometimes there may be things up here they're really interested in hearing, and this is how we encourage them to, you know, go off and find spiritual communities later, and we don't separate, you know. This is for kids and this is for adult. Oh, and the other thing is, we usually give them the choice after opening circle so they conveniently miss joys and concerns. So they come upstairs after joys and concerns. So some of the popular workshops that happened this year. Six Sources in the Kitchen was super popular. Karen and I, it took us like half the year to realize, ooh, we should do this on Soup Sunday. So the kids then started making food for Soup Sunday. That was boo. And they really liked it, and it was always tied to whatever the theme was or some sort of one of our sources, right? Social Justice on the Map. Randy Converse came up with that one. He came to me and said, I want to do something about maps. And I was like, okay. And we came up with Social Justice on the Map. So he's actually down there doing that right now, talking about Iraq. And the kids are learning about where Iraq is and what are some of the social justice issues there, and what is the religious overview of the region. Crafting the sources, that's infinite. I'm hoping to pull Kathy in on that, putting her on the spot. And Chris, finding ways to craft the sources. We can also craft social justice. There's lots of things we can do for that. Paulo is doing some UU principal theater, just acting out scenarios about how you might react to certain things that happen and apply the principles to your decision. Singing Our History was Ron and Barb, Barbara. And then Take Apart Makerspace, Carl and Al. I don't think Al's here today, but Carl and Al did that. And if you follow the RE Facebook page, it's hard to find more joy than the pictures of those kids taking apart computer drives and finding giant magnets and talking about how those things could be recycled. I mean, that's another big thing that can happen in the makerspace, is just talking about sustainability. So what are some of the ways to volunteer? So there's so many different ways you can do it. So quite a few people came to me and said, I like the idea of coming once a month. Like, I will come on the second Sunday of every month. I'll put it on my calendar. That's my day to be an RE. I'm going to do the maps, or I'm going to do the crafting on the second Sunday. Some people like the continuity and the ease of scheduling. That's one way you can do it. And several people did that. You can create a multi-session series on a specific topic. Peggy Small created this amazing series on ethics. It's 12 sessions long, and she's just going to spread it out through the whole year, give people plenty of time, but she covers 12 major forms of ethics, and has an activity to go along with each one and a book to go along with each one. So something like that, you know, you could say, I want to talk about building, I don't know, building houses or something. It's going to take me 6 times to do it. And these are the 6 times I can come. Perfect. 100% around your schedule. You could offer a one-time workshop, like on a holiday or a memorable occasion or a historically significant event. Something that's really, you know, the anniversary of something. I don't know. Give your living history is one of the most amazing things I think you can do for the RE kids. So any of those, you can show up to be a rotating, just show up to be a support person. You don't want to plan anything at all. You just want to show up and have fun with us and learn with us. That reminds me, and I didn't put it in this presentation, but the last Sunday of each month, we've been interviewing somebody from up here and recording the interview. The kids do the interviewing, and then we send it to the National Library of Congress. We interviewed Anne before she left, and Bob, and somebody else. I can't remember. Flew out of my head. But so we'll start that up again next year. So if you like the idea of just coming down and being interviewed, and they ask you 5 questions, the same 5 questions, and then Bob puts you on the radio. So you want to be on the radio. Yeah. Yeah, it is StoryCorps. Yep. Mm-hmm. You can offer to be on call one Sunday a month. You can say, you know what, I'll be an on-call person for the first Sunday of every month if you have more kids than you thought you were going to have, or somebody can't show up, or, you know, I'm offering to be on call. You can mix up any of those. You can be on call and give a workshop and plan a series. Just come and have a conversation with me about your interests and how you might get involved. And I can do that in person. We can do that over email. We can do it on the phone. We can do anything. And I sort of see myself as the like the woman behind the curtain, right? You tell me what you want to do, and I run around, scurry around, and figure out how to make it work for you. And I get all the materials that you need, and I type up the little connection. How does it connect to those pillars? What, you know, why are we doing it? And you just show up. You just show up and be you at that, and your awesome self. Yeah, and so we'll finish off with my favorite quote, which I think I've shared with you many, many times. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. Margaret Mead. I think that a lot of this can be helped by parents paying attention and looking at the calendar and knowing what's coming, because sometimes they might need a little priming. Because I think we all agree it's important for kids to, number one, know where things are happening, and number two, to have a general idea. But that's where it's kind of challenging. Like, Randy is great, and he's very engaging. Carl's down there, and he was like, I'll play games. And I was like, I don't know about games versus Iraq. We might have issues with that. So he said he would come up with something less fun than games. So I don't know what's happening down there. It could be mayhem, and Randy could have just joined Carl's team, and who knows. But we also try to be pretty flexible down there, you know, and that is something as a volunteer you need to be aware of. If you are up against a workshop that for whatever reason draws all the attention, just to not take it personally and try again and come to me and I can help you try again. Yeah, so like you did a yoga workshop, right? At one point you had, two, right?
But it was great.
Right, it was a tiny little yoga class. And so, yeah, and Barb and Ron have been very flexible.
People can talk to Holly at any time, and she can help facilitate your involvement in the RE. Thank you so much. The closing words. Peace shall walk softly through these rooms, till every casual corner blooms into a shrine. Thank you. Peace, and have a good week.